Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burdett, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, February 5th. I don't know about you, but I found it difficult to concentrate these past 2 weeks after U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents shot and killed Alex Pretty in Minneapolis. It hit me hard. Maybe it's because what happened is so clearly captured on video. Maybe it's because Pretty was a nurse, and I know a lot of nurses. Maybe it's because it was Minneapolis, where two of my kids went to school. I also work for a company in Minneapolis, and I have a lot of friends there. Maybe it's because Pretty worked for the VA, which took great care of my father-in-law when he was sick. Maybe it's because my wife, who's a nurse, volunteers in the hospice unit of our local VA here outside of Chicago. Maybe it's because all these parts of my life collided in one tragic moment. Maybe I should ask an AI-powered healthcare chatbot to diagnose me and recommend a treatment plan that doesn't include red wine and doom-scrolling social media. And that's what we're going to talk about on today's show. Not red wine and doom-scrolling social media, but the burst of AI healthcare chatbots on the market. We're going to talk about their impact with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
You're right, Dave. There is a lot going on. I read yesterday that The Nation magazine is formally going to nominate the city of Minneapolis for the Nobel Peace Prize in recognition of their nonviolent and effective response to the thousands of ICE and Border Control agents rampaging through the Minneapolis streets. Never thought we'd see that in America.
That'll speak volumes. That's great, Dave. Thank you. Julie, how are you?
I don't know how everyone else is handling all of this, but I find myself compartmentalizing more than ever. Like, part of me is great, and part of me is outraged, and part of me is actually quite scared, and part of me is also really emboldened. So I don't know. That's how I am.
Yeah. I like that last one. I'm voting for that last compartment. Okay, emboldened. Gosh. All right.
I'll try to skew it up.
Now let's dispense with our usual icebreakers, as it would come off as trivial, you know, given the events of the past few weeks, and let's hop right into our topic. I'm going to rattle off a few headlines, and then I'm going to ask you how what's happening will affect various segments of the healthcare market. So here goes. On January 7th, OpenAI, the San Francisco-based AI company, announced ChatGPT for Health, which lets consumers connect all their medical records and health and wellness apps to OpenAI's technology platform. A day later, on January 8th, OpenAI announced ChatGPT for Healthcare, which lets providers like health systems use OpenAI's tech platform to carry out various administrative, clinical, and operational tasks. On January 11th, Anthropic, the AI company based in San Francisco, announced Claude for Healthcare, which enables providers, payers, and consumers to use Claude, Anthropic's AI platform, for various medical and healthcare tasks. On January 21st, Amazon One Medical, the primary care platform, introduced its AI Health Assistant, which offers 24/7 personalized health and medical guidance to One Medical members. And confirming once again that there are no coincidences, on January 21st, ECRI, the patient safety organization, named the misuse of AI chatbots as the number one health technology hazard for 2026. How about that? Dave, there's a lot going on in a short period of time. If I'm a healthcare provider, like a doctor or health system, what should I be thinking right now? And what should I be doing right now?
Well, just to add to your list, and I know it was a long list, Dave, Be Well Connected Health has recently signed partnership agreements with both Google and OpenAI to be the interoperability hub for the tech giants, both tech giants, which essentially connects their AI models to real-world medical data. Way to go, Kristen Valdez. Ooh. Right?
Right. One of our healthcare revolutionaries. Yeah,
she's awesome. But anyway, what should providers be thinking? You know, in two words, oh shit. And what should they be doing? Getting off the pot and engaging with the tech. with the chatbots. Machines won't replace doctors. Doctors who know how to work with the machines will replace those who don't. Dave, I know you can't get enough of HAL and Odyssey 2001.
That's true.
So it's okay to not fully trust the machines yet. On the other hand, doctors make mistakes and misdiagnose all the time, and I think we tend to overlook that. And in a sort of fundamental sense, why shouldn't the medical profession use the power of AI and chatbots appropriately to diagnose and treat illness and disease better, more effectively, earlier, all of those things? What I'm about to say, I can say because my wife, Terry, won't listen to this podcast, but every time I bring up autonomous Waymo cars, which you both know I love Waymo, I just love Waymo, she says that a Waymo car killed a cat, so she'll never ride in one. Mm-hmm. Well, how many manually driven cars kill cats, run over cats every day? Hundreds, maybe 1,000. The point is that we hold machines to unrealistic performance standards. It doesn't mean we shouldn't pay attention, but let's not just go crazy because one bad thing happens, and happens actually far less frequently than it does in the real world. But I digress. Back to the central question, why are consumers using these tools at such scale? And, you know, it's really three things. They're clearly getting information and answers they're not receiving from their provider interactions. It's often an easy first stop for understanding the implication of symptoms. That's how I tend to use it. And the tools are, generally speaking, far more right than they are wrong. So providers can't ignore this AI trend. It's here. It's at scale. And I've been saying for a long time, the providers, and this is both doctors as well as hospitals, if they want to remain relevant in the marketplace, they have to reconfigure their operations so they're creating value and they're serving end users far more effectively. Stop making the end user experience so miserable. Another sort of offshoot of this is it's going to be interesting or curious to see how brand strength influences the marketplace with these chatbots. The Cleveland Clinic is working on a $10 AI primary care visit. That could be very powerful. I mean, imagine paying 10 bucks and getting algorithms that using all your medical data to assess what you need to do and where your risks are and so on. What will Amazon do with its One Medical vertical? Will they start infusing AI chatbots in a much more vigorous and active way than they currently do? That could be intriguing. But just to wrap it all up, one final word of advice to providers, because that's who you asked me to counsel. Here's what I'd say. You have to figure out how to use medical chatbots to improve end user consumer experience, or the marketplace will figure it out for you and you won't like the results.
Hop on the train or get in the Waymo.
It'll be Waymo better.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Okay, Dave, if you're your regular run-of-the-mill system, I was going to ask you how you'd start engaging the consumer to build, you know, market share in this area. Is that what you would do? $10 AI bot visits? Would you go further?
I'd probably start figuring out which intelligence platform I was going to align with. Maybe it's Google, maybe it's Amazon, maybe it's Cleveland Clinic, maybe it's some combination of those. But one thing I would not do is try to develop it myself. I got to tell you, when I was a banker, Julie, I used to get so frustrated because I would go around to these different health systems, and this was the age of protocol development, and they all were developing their own protocols for the same diseases that afflict us all. And I thought it was just ridiculously duplicative. So don't do that. Don't try and do it yourself. Understand there's a need to fill here and consider your alternatives and go move with all deliberate speed. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, I've taken a buy, not build philosophy here with home projects too.
Exactly.
They'll wise up. Good advice. Thanks, Dave. Julie, you're the one who brought up this topic on last week's show, or I should say 2 weeks ago. Thanks for the idea. What's the market impact on health technology? If I'm running a health tech company, what should I be thinking right now? And what should I be doing right now?
Well, I think the first thing to understand is that, I mean, as Dave basically said, this is not a feature to bolt on. It's a business model and a market shift. So you need to reorient now. If I'm a digital health company that's been giving wellness advice or something, you know, fairly commoditized at this point, I'd be pretty concerned. If I'm, you know, much deeper in a clinical specialty, I definitely think there's hope. It's interesting. I just saw a PwC stat that they estimate that 1 trillion with a T of our annual healthcare spend could shift by 2035. So that's less than 10 years from our fragmented facility centric care to digital first AI driven systems. 1 trillion. So, you know, it's moving fast. So to Dave's point, the time is now. And if I were a company today, I'd be asking myself, am I a care delivery company with tech, or am I a technology company enabling care? And where I sit in this AI first tech stack really matters. Like, am I at the experience care delivery layer, you know, the AI first virtual primary specialty care? Or am I into the workflow and productivity part? Or do I get down into the data and intelligence layer? Or am I part of the infrastructure that's the connectivity layer with our source systems and, you know, others outside my four walls? And understanding where you sit and the role you play with that AI first input coming your way, I think is going to be really important. And there's a whole new crop of companies that I find amazing. Like, I've been hearing about Cure AI for a long time, but a company called Lotus AI was just in the news this week for raising a round. I've seen a company called Counsyl, Gen Health, Future Clinic, and more I feel like are sprouting up every day. And some of these models are like pure AI doctor chatbot. And some have physicians, you know, on the ready to step in for diagnosis, prescriptions, referrals, et cetera. But, you know, others are designed, which I think is interesting, to be your doctor's tool, as Dave was saying, to enable your doctor to use these AI bots to be an extension of them. So the question will be, you know, will the physicians who adopt this be the winners, or will we see these AI bot first technology companies enabling care win? And, you know, it's maybe not an either or. But get this. I found an article about a hospital in China, an AI hospital with AI doctor agents across multiple specialties. So 42 AI doctors across 21 specialties treating over 300 diseases. So while that's much broader than primary care, it effectively prototypes a fully agentic AI native model. So China's on it. We need to get on it. But, you know, back to us. I definitely think consumer acquisition and trust are going to be huge. And I wonder how many of these companies are going to need to get into the referral system of the belly of the beast, because Function Health has yet to refer me to a doctor for anything. Maybe there's nothing that wrong with me, hopefully. But it'll be interesting to see how many of these models go beyond access and convenience and play in the broader delivery system.
It gets back to a phrase we've used before: where you stand depends on where you sit, right? It seems to permeate a lot of what we're talking about. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Well, great analysis per usual, Julie. I think a trillion is modest. I mean, it's a $6 trillion market right now. To think that 13, 15% will switch to digital over 10 years, that seems easily achievable. I'd probably go for a higher number, but, you know, PwC is being conservative, trying to be provocative and conservative at the same time. And, you know, the great thing about agentic chatbots, prototypes in China is the people can't kill the doctors when they misdiagnose the way. So anyway, Julie, I'm not going to let you off the hook, because one of the things I loved that you did was talk about the wide range of activities that's occurring in this space, the different models, the different types of companies. And so we're clearly in the early stages of medical chatbots flowing into the marketplace. And as always happens with maturation, as markets mature, the relative fitness of competing products separates winners from losers. Here's where I'm not letting you off the hook. So how do you think that fitness process will evolve with the medical chatbots? Mm-hmm. How will the winners separate themselves from the pack? And do you have any early favorites?
Well, it's funny. Your question makes me think of this cartoon that I've seen more than once of the two robots basically talking to each other and saying, "No, you go first. No, you go first. No, you go first. And I mean, you can totally imagine that, right? But it's actually, I think, how the bots make decisions that really matters, right? And I have heard on the payment side discussions with pretty tech forward CEOs who talk about, you know, auto adjudication in a way that feels like submitting your taxes to the IRS. You know, the IRS puts the rules out there, you follow the rules, you submit your taxes according to the rules, and you know exactly what your refund or your rollover or your payment's going to be, and that is that. And I personally see way too many business models that rely on our opaqueness today.
Yeah.
But I think that is how the bots, you know, many of the tech world imagine how the bots will evolve. And I look at, you know, personalization to me might be part of your fitness question, Dave. If you think about the Cleveland Clinic example, like we're going to be in a place where personalization could really win. So it's the access to data,
right,
that will really make a difference in terms of how you can do the best with the bots, right? So that might be the way, but I can't say I have any winners yet to pick, Dave.
Yeah. You know, when was it? 15 years ago, Cleveland Clinic and IBM came up with Watson and went to the marketplace, and the marketing got way ahead of the actual performance. But I wonder if there won't be some combination of strong medical brand with strong tech brand that helps define the parameters of the marketplace. But you're right. I think it's, and maybe that's the great thing, right? The market will evolve in the bottom up sort of way, and the better companies will win. And if we knew who they were, it wouldn't be worth having the investment in the competition, right?
That's so right. That's the fun of it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as someone whose brain was wired by multiple viewings of 2001, A Space Odyssey, like you mentioned, Dave, I'm not quite ready to trust AI with my life. And that's why I threw that ECRI item in there. I'm not alone. But on the other hand, I have embraced telemedicine and physician assistance. You know, I'll get there. And if AI can make the service aspect of healthcare delivery better, I'm all for it. Now let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, you probably saw this, both of you, because you're on it, but the PBM legislation finally dropped. And I don't pretend to say that I've read it and I know what it says, but I think a lot of people have been waiting for this legislation for a long time. And on the same day, you see that the FTC settles with Express Scripts for something that doesn't sound like too ominous for Express Scripts. So I don't know, maybe the PBM issue is working its way through.
Dave, what's your big healthcare news of the week?
Well, I've got two of them. The first is I'm watching that measles outbreak in South Carolina like a hawk. They're up to 876 cases as of yesterday, growing fast, and over 800 of them are with unvaccinated kids. South Carolina is not that far from Disney World, so are we looking at a totally preventative crisis, you know, sometime soon? And then the second one's just kind of fun. There was a study that came out in Science this last week that said that our longevity is based 55% on our genes, a much higher percentage than many had previously thought, which is bad news for all these biohackers out there. So if you want to live over 100, you got to win the genetic lottery.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Burda for Foresight Health.